keeps us wired in on the Seattle sports scene, courtesy 710 ESPN in Seattle. Online, check out 710sports.com. On Twitter, use the handle at TheBGustafson. Brandon checks in. Thanks for joining us, BG. Always a pleasure. How are things to the north?
Yeah, we're good. Wrapping up on the NFL season yesterday, looking ahead to spring training, pitchers and catchers report in a few weeks if all things go right, so let's get it rolling.
You know, I know we mostly focus on the Mariners and Seahawks, but you're a Husky alum. 4 years ago, they hired Mike Hopkins after they fired Lorenzo Romar. He had two decent seasons. Last year and this year, I'm going to get technical and say yuck. What's the buzz among the Husky fans? Because this thing looks like it's spiraling in a bad direction.
Yeah, not looking too great. And unlike last year, when you had the benefit of having two guys like Campbell and McDaniels, you know, first round pick talent, this year there's just really not that guy. So there's not really a whole lot to look forward to when you turn on the game. It's tough watching for sure. The last 2 years, especially after Hopkins' first two seasons, definitely exceeded expectations. I think that a lot of people are talking about, well, what does it look like if they were to try to move on from him? And it looks like he's still owed a pretty penny. So I think what I read is he's still got at least 1 year, maybe two, even if things really don't turn around. But after those first two seasons of him, leading the program, it's definitely been disappointing.
Yeah, you know, he's one of those guys who sometimes you wonder why a guy's an assistant for 23 years. Maybe they're just really good assistants, but like you said, we'll see. So, you mentioned there was a football game yesterday, and of course, you know, was Brady going to pass the torch to the modern-day best quarterback? A shootout, would Casey overcome their offensive line? So, what did you expect to see heading into the game, and were you surprised that it ended up this lopsided?
So I had picked Kansas City to win just because I thought that even if the Tampa Bay defensive front was able to generate pressure against that beat-up offensive line, that Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, Eric Bieniemy would be able to come up with something resembling a quick sort of passing attack to get the ball into playmakers' hands. That never happened. It was just a lot of those four-man defensive fronts just beating up on those five offensive linemen. You had your right guard playing right tackle. Your two starting tackles are out. I mean, it was just patchwork is, I guess, the nicest way to describe it. It was definitely surprising. Just given how bad the Kansas City offensive line was beaten up and how good Tampa Bay's defense in general, but especially their front, has been this year, I thought that obviously the Buccaneers had a chance. I wasn't somebody who was like, oh, Kansas City 100% going to blow them out or anything like that, but if it was going to be a blowout, I would have expected it to be that way. I did not expect the Buccaneers blowout by any means. I thought that if Tampa was going to win this one, it was going to be at least somewhat close.
You know, kind of piggybacking on what you just said, you've obviously been in Seattle with the Seahawks, see some high-level defense, Legion of Boom, obviously Bobby Wags, but, you know, Jason Pierre-Paul, you mentioned that front four, Levante David, Devin White, they got a young, really active secondary. So overall, I mean, how impressed should we be with what they did to kind of suffocate KC, offensive line and all?
I mean, you're keeping one of the best offenses in recent memory out of the end zone. You're keeping Patrick Mahomes, even with that, you know, banged up offensive line, you're keeping Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, you're keeping those guys out of the end zone for an entire four quarters. I mean, it's incredible. It's the best defensive performance that we've seen in the Super Bowl since the Seahawks absolutely dominated the Broncos in that record-setting offense back in 2013. The only other one in recent memory that kind of comes to mind, aside from that really, really boring Rams-Patriots game, which I throw a lot of that up to just offensive ineptitude, when the Broncos took care of business against the Panthers in Super Bowl 50, Von Miller just absolutely took that game over. But in this day and age with, high-flying offenses, rules that definitely favor quarterbacks and offenses, it's really rare to see a team the caliber of Kansas City with a guy like Patrick Mahomes, who looks like Superman a lot of the time. Even his incompletions were just incredible. But to keep them out of the end zone for four quarters, I mean, hats off to Todd Bowles and those guys. And, he probably should have gotten a few more looks as a head coach given what happened yesterday.
Yeah, by the way, the two back-to-back incompletions, the most exciting incompletions like in NFL history. That was insane.
Unbelievable. The arm talent that guy has, he looked like a shortstop fielding a slow rolling ground ball and throwing it to first base. That's really what it was, but this guy's throwing it 40 yards downfield and hitting his running back in the helmet. You know, it's unbelievable.
It was classic. We're talking with Brandon Gustafson of ESPN 710 in Seattle. When we last spoke, Brian Schottenheimer was still the offensive coordinator. He got let go a couple days later, entered the Rams passing game coordinator and coach, the quarterback coach, sorry, Shane Waldron. So what's the word among you Seahawk followers and analysts on Pete Carroll's choice to run the offense?
Well, it's definitely different than the kind of guys that he's had running the offense in the past. Something that people kind of forget about when Brian Schottenheimer took over after they let go of Daryl Bevel after the 2017 season is they kept like 70-75% of the playbook and the terminology from Bevel. It's been a very, very similar offense for almost all of Pete Carroll's tenure in Seattle since 2010. Shane Waldron is a completely different hire. Yes, he comes from an offense in the Rams who likes to run the ball a lot, but as you said, passing game coordinator, he has experience as a quarterback's coach. So it's going to be fun to see what kind of stuff he tries to implement. A lot of people had this worry that regardless of who the hire was, whether it was Shane Waldron or whoever, that it would be somebody who's kind of like a yes man to Pete Carroll. It really doesn't sound like that's going to be the case. Waldron made it pretty clear that he's going to be bringing in the kind of stuff that he's comfortable with and has familiarity with, but that in the interview process and getting to know Pete Carroll, that there was a lot of common ground, and I think a lot of that is their belief in running the ball, running it effectively, using the run to set up those deep and explosive play-action passes. And from the sounds of it, Russell Wilson's really excited about the hire, too. We're going to have to see how that pairing ends up going on, obviously. We haven't seen a game yet, so of course you're going to be saying good things about each other, but it sounded like if during the interview process they got to know each other pretty well on a personal basis, and you're getting a guy who's in the division, who's played you twice a year, he knows what Russell can do, so it'll be fun to see how he can try and maximize his capabilities.
You know, over the season, you did a great job providing updates about how the Seahawk rookies were performing. Late in the first round, they took Jordan Brooks from Texas Tech. Kind of an interesting path, backing up a guy, Bruce Irvin, who got hurt. Then he got hurt. But overall, how he finished, how would you evaluate his season one performance?
Yeah, you got to like what you saw, especially down the stretch. As you noted, beginning of the year, he's backing up. He's mostly playing some special teams. He's not really in there. Bruce Irvin gets hurt right away. He comes in to play strong side linebacker, which was Bruce's spot. He gets hurt in his first start, but then when he came back, they decided to move KJ Wright to that Sam strong side linebacker spot, and they let Brooks play more in space at the weak side, and that benefited that entire defense. Really fast, really instinctive. He plays downhill. He plays really tough. He hits really hard. And this is a guy who, when they were going into those nickel packages, especially on third downs and obvious passing situations, he was the guy leaving the field instead of KJ Wright or Bobby Wagner, but he was still at or near the top in terms of total tackles leaders the back half of the season. He's playing like 35-40% of snaps. They have a decision to make with KJ Wright, who's a free agent, but I think even if KJ Wright comes back, Brooks showed he's somebody who really should not be leaving the field going forward. They get a lot of flack for some first-round misses like Rashad Penny, LJ Collier, things like that. But when, you know, it's funny, nobody expected them to take a linebacker last year, but this pick seems to be working out at least right now.
Yeah, and at 27. A few final thoughts for Brandon Gustafson, ESPN 710 in Seattle. And you mentioned day two last draft landed DK Metcalf. Lots of questions about the offensive line heading into this year. Round three, Damian Lewis, part of that monster LSU national title team. I mean, dude steps in and just starts. How about his level of play kind of just taking over?
Yeah, and he's a big dude who likes to maul guys in the run game. He made that very clear when he talked to our station early on before he started to play, which is a lot of fun to see. But, yeah, having a guy who comes in as a rookie, third-round pick, so not really the expectations of a guy in the first or second round, but coming in, playing right away, they felt so comfortable about him that they cut DJ Fluker, who'd been a good starter for them for 2 years, in order to save some money, and they just basically gave the guy the job right away. They felt that good about him. And I think that something, you know, we'll talk about like the physical stuff, like him mauling guys in the run game, beating guys in the passing game, but he's a smart football player. He was able to go and step in as a starting center, a position he'd never played before, when the Seahawks were down their top two guys in Posick and Fuller. And yeah, he had one little hiccup kind of early on, but other than that, he was pretty solid. Pete Carroll said after the year, if they ever needed to slide him over, you know, they felt comfortable or that he could be a full-time center. That's pretty remarkable, especially when you consider no OTAs, really, really different off-season and practicing given the pandemic. So to have a rookie come in right away and play all 16 games for you as a day two pick, I mean, can't get much better than that.
You know, I mentioned Legion of Boom earlier, and this group had some great moments. And as you wrote last week, the team in general's got a lot of free agents, which includes their starting corner, Shaquille Griffin. So what do you think? Is he going to stay? And if not, how well suited are they to sustain his departure?
Yeah, that's going to be the most interesting free agent decision, because I think that'll tell a lot about the direction that they're going this offseason. He's somebody who doesn't really take the ball away. I think he has 5 career interceptions, and 3 of them were this year, and I think 2 of them were in the same game even. So he doesn't really get around the ball like you might want with a true number one corner, but he's probably going to be asking for top dollar. He's going to be asking for something close to that. Byron Jones, who the really good corner from the Cowboys who signed with the Dolphins, he's getting $15-16 million a year, and he has less interceptions than Griffin does. Will Griffin be able to get that in an offseason where the cap's going down? I don't know. I don't think so, but I think he'll at least get probably $13-14 million, and I don't see Seattle paying up for that. I would say they would be a little more inclined to try to keep him if they didn't find a diamond in the rough in DJ Reed. DJ Reed, they claimed off of waivers from the 49ers. He was initially a nickel corner. He's a little smaller at 5'9", but they played him outside at the end of the year, and he's playing some good football. If you have DJ Reed and you can retain a guy like Quentin Dunbar, who was hurt, and you saw, you know, some flashes, but you never saw him fully healthy, you know what you have with Trey Flowers for at least one more year. He's at least an okay number two cornerback, but it's going to be really hard for them to keep Shaquille Griffin, given what he's probably going to be demanding and receiving on the open market.
And lastly, I got to get a Mariner thought in here. In the weekend article, you and the whole 710 staff posted, focused on 3 young players, and we've already discussed Kyle Lewis, the Rookie of the Year. So this kid, Jared Kelenic, who they got from the Mets in the Robbie Cano deal, you know, he was the 6th overall pick back in 2018, only 21. What do you know about him?
Jared Kelenic is a stud. Simply put, that guy absolutely mashes the baseball. He's ridiculously strong. He's really fast. He's somebody that could probably hit 30 home runs and steal 20, 25 bags for you and play really good defense in center field or right field. My coworker Brent Stecker and I, we were talking today, and the trade that the Mariners pulled off, getting rid of Robinson Cano's albatross of a contract along with Edwin Diaz to get Jared Kelenic, a few veterans who, you know, aren't with the team anymore, and then Justin Dunn, who you still kind of have to figure out whether he's a guy for you going forward or not. But just to get Kelenic, who's a guy who's considered a top 4, top 5 prospect in all of baseball by all these different publications, is just incredible. He's not going to start he's not going to be an opening day guy just because of service time and things like that. And also, even though he's probably ready and he probably could handle it, he only has about 88, I think, or 90 plate appearances total in Double A. They'll probably start him in Triple A Tacoma, but man, that guy is driven. He says all the right things. I know that he works incredibly hard. His social media stuff is just kind of eye popping, but he's somebody who I think is going to be, you know, hitting in the top part of that lineup for a long, long time, and he's going to be really good.
No, the more I read about him, I was like, oh, man, I got to get Brandon's take on this guy. no, you read about him, it's like, just get him out there already. But like you said, service time, there's a lot of other considerations. But, folks,
got to be patient with him, man. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, he's Brandon Gustafson on Twitter at the B Gustafson online, 710sports.com. He's here courtesy of ESPN 710 in Seattle. Brandon, awesome stuff as always. We always greatly appreciate your time. A lot of fun. Be well, and we'll talk soon.
Absolutely. Take care, Steve.
All right. Take it easy.